Welcome to the Assembly of Silence Radio Hour. This audio program has been carefully packed to the legal limit with a weekly allowance of non-governmentally approved deep thoughts per square minute of podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Judah and Noah.
Okay, here we are.
We're on again.
Yeah, episode 2. What's it going to be about? Let's just dive right in.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Let's do it.
Sorry about the dog. It's a new dog. But even later, when it's no longer a new dog, it's going to be a problem.
This is a behavior that will not change.
I'll try to find a way to deal with it. Okay. Here, I'm going to try. I'm going to mute my mic.
Shut up!
Let's see if that worked.
Was my mic muted for that?
No. All right, come on. Let's get down to business,
right,
man.
Down to business.
I can't screw around like this.
No, that's not.
What's going on?
Okay,
what are we talking about?
So, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, this term life force gets used a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In various traditions, there's always something said about a life force.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Boy, you
where
got me.
Is it?
I don't know.
I have no clue.
End of story.
I'm going to take some stabs at it, though.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right.
I'm ready.
So, you know, here we have this physical body, right? And when we look at the physical body, it's made of the earth, right? It's minerals. It's kind of like the physical earthness of us. And its trajectory is towards death and decay, really, without a life force.
Right.
Without an enlivening force.
Right.
The physical body is prone to death and decay. And as a nutritionist, my belief is that the role of nutrition is really to resist death.
Interesting.
The role of nutrition is to resist death. And when we eat and take in the sensorial world, because really, let's be honest, food isn't the only thing that nourishes us.
Right.
Like our entire being is nourished by all of our senses.
And right.
And what are our senses?
Nourished in different ways.
Nourished in different ways, right? And so, but what are these, what do these have in common? And as far as I can tell, what they all have in common is that they stimulate the secretion of our inherent forces, or they stimulate the secretion of substances from glands. When we eat, the pancreas releases insulin. It releases digestive enzymes. The gallbladder secretes bile, right? When we experience something pleasurable, joyful, when we experience joy, the substantia nigra produces dopamine, right? So glandular secretions.
There's another gland that will produce an excretion when it experiences joy as well.
Right. Yeah.
So excretions are a byproduct of the stimulation that arises from the challenges posed by nutrition. You could say something like that.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that that's definitely what one of the roles of nutrition is, to challenge the body to secrete its own inherent forces.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's
whether
that's,
they be digestive forces, stomach acid, pancreatic juice, bile.
So it's work,
right?
The organ is, or the gland is, having to work in order to cope with the substance,
right,
to assimilate and transform.
Right. Mm-hmm. And here's a little interesting thing, is that if you are eating refined and processed food that's been stripped of its nutrients, there's less force in the food. There's less forces in the food, vitamins, minerals, fatty acids, whatever it might be. And that food becomes really easy. It gets digested really quickly. Right?
Like white flour.
Right. white flour versus whole grain flour. We'll just use that as an example. Or let's use this example, white flour versus vegetables.
Okay, right.
Both sources of carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
One with very little, one that experiences very little resistance from the digestive process, meaning because there's little to digest, there's little to break down.
Unless, of course, you're gluten intolerant or something like that.
Right, which then that's a whole other issue.
And you might wonder whether or not gluten intolerance is a result of generations not having their digestive system challenged enough to be able to handle, right? So in a certain sense, the system wants to be challenged, and if it isn't, it's then going to become deficient. It's not. It's like resistance training, where the muscles are really no longer. If you don't get that kind of training, and you're not pushing against force,
right,
then the capacity for the operation to occur gets diminished.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. So you consume a plate of vegetables. There's fiber, there's vitamins, there's minerals, there's all the whole
like a phytochemical profile.
Phytochemical profile, thank
like
you.
That.
And that requires more digestive force. So the body has to work harder to digest it, to break it down.
But it also gets more out of it.
But it gets more out of it. Exactly.
Right.
More inherent forces are stimulated.
Hmm.
Right? And then what that leads to is greater vitality, greater life force.
Because there's an exercised capacity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking that the glandular system, the endocrine system, is the seat of the life body, we could say. The body that brings life into the physical body.
Hmm. Glandular system. Why the glandular system as opposed to other organs?
Because it's the glandular secretions that build us up. So the hypothalamus stimulates the pituitary. The pituitary releases thyroid-stimulating hormone, adrenocorticotropic-releasing hormone. So adrenal function, thyroid function, ovaries, testes, that's all in that hypothalamic pituitary axis. That's one.
But isn't also like a spleen producing insulin, isn't that part of also
pancreas,
a building?
The pancreas producing insulin.
Right. Yep. Pancreas producing insulin.
So it's pancreas is really interesting. It's an endocrine exocrine. So it's part of the glandular system also
in a
unique way, in its own unique way. Absolutely. Yeah.
But none of the organs would be considered like the liver or, I mean, you know, you could say the lung is essentially producing oxygenated blood, which is fundamental to the basic process is still analogous, right?
Right.
Now, you couldn't say necessarily it's a secretion, you know, it's not producing a fluid, it's energizing a fluid, I guess.
I would say energizing a fluid would be really a great way to do it. And what's really interesting about the red blood cells is they're one of the only, if not the only cell in the human body that has no DNA. So as a red blood cell forms, it has DNA, and once it matures, the DNA is cleaved off. To make as much room for hemoglobin as possible. And hemoglobin is what holds oxygen in the red blood cell. So here, and we can get a little far out here, is that in many traditions, they talk about the life being in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The qi is in the blood in traditional Chinese medicine. In Judaism, the life is in the blood.
Well, the qi is throughout the body, but it
circulates.
It is the enlivening force within the blood.
Exactly.
But it's an enlivening force along its own meridians that aren't necessarily related to the movement of the blood.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a...
In Western esotericism, the I, the capital I being that I, which is individualized and universal, so just a really brief on that, is that we all say I.
Mm-hmm.
All of us say I. I can't say I about you, and you can't say I about me.
Mm.
I can only say I about myself, and so therefore, my I is connected to the universal I.
And it seems like it's just too bizarre that I would essentially be one. You know, the capital I looks an awful lot like a one.
Right, exactly. Know?
So
exactly.
Then we have that alone thing again, the all one, mm-hmm. right? Sense of self being mm-hmm. married to a unity concept.
Right.
Yeah.
And so in Western esotericism, the eye's home is in the blood. And when we look at that, the point of when we eat food and we digest it, and those nutrients cross the threshold of the digestive tract into the lymphatic or into the circulatory capillaries, the digestive capillaries, those nutrients are being delivered into the blood as a way to give the eye a taste, so to speak, of its experience of the external world. And with breath, breath streams right into the blood. It doesn't get broken down or digested or anything. It's a main line right into the blood, breath, to inspire, to in spiritu, in spirit. But it, God breathes spirit into Adam. Hmm.
Interesting.
Right? So
you're making an analog between the processes in the body and the enlivening spirit within all living beings, you could say.
Yeah.
So there's some ephemeral agent that gets introduced to what would otherwise be essentially inert material
mm-hmm.
that then brings it into the processes of life.
Right.
Interesting.
And if we look at the blood, the blood's job is to deliver nutrients and oxygen to all the cells and tissue of the body,
mm-hmm.
continually circulating, right? And all glandular secretions end up in the blood to be carried to cells and tissues throughout the body.
Hmm.
So it's like the blood is like this life force.
It's a carrier. It's a transporter.
Carrier of life forces through the body.
So it's like you get the basic energy component in oxygen. You get the nutritive support in the food mm-hmm. byproducts
mm-hmm.
That are broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get these messages, essentially, for kind of switching mode type mm-hmm. of thing from the glandular system.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then it's interesting that, yeah, so we have this carrier that ejects its genetic material, making room. Now, what happens to the blood after the delivery? I know it comes back and gets reoxygenated.
So it turns into blue blood, venous blood. It goes into the venous system and eventually comes back through the heart, then back into the lungs to get oxygen and then back to the...
So it's reusing the cell?
Yeah. And it also gets not 100%. So
right.
What also happens is it gets filtered through the spleen. And the spleen's job is to decide who's done now. And it'll destroy that and recycle it. And then who's still good and lets that go.
Now, I've also heard that, and tell me if this is correct, that the spleen is kind of the producer of the white blood cells. Is that correct?
Not necessarily, no. So you have B cells, which are produced in the bone marrow, and you have T cells, which are produced in the thymus gland. Yeah.
So there's no immune system cells produced in the spleen?
I'm not 100% sure about that. So
okay, we're going to have to look that one up.
We'll have to look that one up. But the spleen does have, I believe, an immune component to it. But more than anything, the spleen's job is to filter the blood out and decide who's had enough and who's still good enough to keep going.
Hmm. Yeah, because someone had told me, I'm pretty sure it was the spleen, that one of the jobs that it has is to take red blood cells and, in essence, expose them to a bunch of potential pathogens to train them and basically scare the crap out of them so that they know what to search for in their new life as a white blood cell. And I've been wondering if that's if that's true or not. I haven't had time to look it up. So that'll be something that we'll look up for some other future discussion. So the question that I would have now is, how does the agent of the eye interface with this kind of seat of the life body? Mm. Right. So we have these processes that are happening within the body that are essentially autonomic. We don't have direct control over them from the sense of the individual eye.
Right.
So what is the part of our consciousness that is in some way or another involved in these processes? Because obviously the enlivening spirit that we associate with our conscious being is something which perishes along with our body, right? So if that goes, then basically the autonomic nervous system stops as well. Mm-hmm. So there appears to be some real connection between the two. And one of the things that's I've been curious about and trying to get a grip on is, how do we describe the interface between the conscious being and all these various processes that are happening in the body that are associated, seem to be associated with the consciousness, but yet we're not like literally consciously controlling?
I would say that there's another mediating factor here, and that would be the soul body. And that would be the land, and as I said in our last episode, the land of thinking, feeling, and willing, our drives, desires, passions, so that when we transform our thinking and our feeling life and our actions in the world, this can actually transform our life forces as well.
Yeah, well, the thinking, feeling, and willing seem to correspond with the part of our consciousness that we are actively engaged in,
right?
But all the autonomic processes that you're describing as being the seat of the life body are in some way still related to that, and yet we're not consciously, we don't have a conscious handle on them, unless, you know, maybe some people who have practiced various types of yoga or meditation are able to access the autonomic system. But just in general, as a matter of course, it's not something that we seem to have conscious control over.
Well, and yet we can, actually. So we'll go down this road, that we know that if you're locked into your sympathetic nervous system, then digestive capacity decreases.
Right.
Gut motility slows down. Digestive secretions reduce. So digestion is not going to happen so well.
But that's still a kind of a meta stage. Like, we're not actually down there doing the work of, putting the oxygen, the nutrients, and the secretions into a cell, managing like, okay, yeah, that blood cell, I want you to go to that capillary and feed that cell there. It needs it. You know, we're not doing any of that, but it's happening.
Right.
And those are some intricate things going on.
Right.
So
that's the gift of the autonomic nervous system, is that, as you said, it's in control of our automatic functions. So we can slow our heart rate down consciously, but we can't stop it.
Well, supposedly some yogis can for some period of time, you know.
Right.
But certainly we cannot.
Right. Let's just say the average individual walking around can't do that. I can learn to control my thinking and control my feeling life.
To some extent.
To some extent. And that's going to make it a lot easier on my physiology, right? If I'm not swinging between the pendulum of reaction, stimulus, reaction.
Right.
High, low. If I learn to have a stimulus and through being either in heart coherence and in a coherent state with good resilience, my ability to respond is better. So I have some space between stimulus and response. Then that's less demand on my secretions.
Right. But I would say that that's fundamentally an influence and not a control.
Right.
Control is sort of like, you've got your hands on the levers, and that's what's doing the stuff.
Right.
So, you know, there is a way, I think that there is a way of describing the kind of relationship that might be going on To account for the, it goes back to the concept that we were discussing in the first episode, having to do with the seed of consciousness forming in networks. So you get a collective of cells that need to be managed. And so there's a communication system that basically the nerves start to take on great importance when you have a collective.
Right.
So we can see how as organisms got more and more complicated, the need for a good communication system became more and more paramount. And so that is where the seat of consciousness came into being with a collection of other conscious beings.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about essentially a meta being within a world of conscious beings, which is maybe one of the great arguments for the existence of the, God, if you like, the core conscious being at the center of all existence.
Right.
So we see that there's kind of an overall pattern here where there are collections of conscious beings which, as a result of the need for their interconnectedness to coordinate their functionality, have a mediating, if you like, conscious being. And we can see a similar process occurring now within human civilization. As we become more complicated, we have a mediating, connective network that's happening that's becoming increasingly important to coordinate our various activities and our functions because they're all reliant upon each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we are essentially, like the social insects, the bees and the ants, creating a superorganism.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, you know, that would be a model for describing the relationship between our individual I and the kind of the participants in the life body, you
mm-hmm.
could say,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still interesting to think about the relationship of this, of the conscious being who is the network, right? And then all of its subordinate conscious beings. So if we have a bunch of cells, right, each having their function, the way in which communication occurs between these two layers, because as we've already established, like the I conscious being, the network conscious being, isn't pulling all the levers that are happening within each of these processes of each cell. So, but it's sending messages.
It's in receiving information.
Right.
More than anything.
So in a sense, you could say that the conscious part of us is the receiving information part.
Mm.
Right. And the mechanism is something that's already been worked out prior to all of that.
Right.
It's like a set of relationships that got, it's like the operating system,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. you know? And then there's like a sort of software running on that, and that software has feelers into the world,
mm-hmm.
has sensing apparatus, and that sensing apparatus is monitoring what's going on and is then able to kind of tell the operating system what functions need to be called
right.
in order to get stuff done.
Right.
So there's a lot of mediation going on there.
Right. All in the unconscious. Everything's happening. There's a lot happening unconsciously of like sending these nutrients need to go here. These proteins need to be built here.
Right.
This, this is this amount of energy needs to be used for this process.
Mm-hmm.
And all this is totally under our radar. We have no idea what it's really taking to make this organism resist death and thrive.
Right. So that's an interesting, getting back to your definition of nutrition as being, the purpose is basically to resist death. I think that's a really interesting thing to consider. I'm not sure exactly whether I agree with it or not. I see what you're saying, but you could make the case that this is a materialist-oriented perspective,
yeah. right?
So
yeah.
the preservation of the body is something that, you know, you could make the argument that that's something that's not questioned very much, and so that would be the kind of normal way of going about thinking things, right?
We could say on a higher level that the purpose of nutrition is to provide the eye information about its experience in the physical world.
Well, there are certainly cases where people have decided that resisting death is not the goal, right? So we have a history not only within the spiritual world, but also within the military world of people and warriors, you know, people who sacrifice their lives. They decide, well, my life is not as important as a cause.
Right.
My people, my nation, my belief, whatever it is,
right?
So clearly there's a precedent for a set of people, and maybe we could say of living beings, because it's probably, there are certainly animals that exhibit self-sacrificing behavior as well, right? Social insects, you know, amongst the most noticeable, right? So in those cases, right, you could say that the nutrition is definitely going to a different purpose, right? It's actually to fulfill the promise of life, right? And to preserve what one finds to be of value in it, irrespective of one's own benefit or loss. This feels like a subject that has so many different pieces to it, and I think it is one of the most, it's something we keep returning to, and it's something that has an awful lot to consider in it, you know? It's a little daunting. It kind of blows me out of the water whenever we start to approach this stuff.
Right.
And almost makes me feel like we've hit an assembly of silence moment here.
I think we got it.
Oh, yeah. So,
let's just take a moment and allow that to settle.
You know, we can take a break every now and then. We can say, okay, so we're going to play a little music. Try and recover from what just happened. And we'll rejoin you in a moment.
That's true.
When I don't have you.
we want to get one thing absolutely clear with everyone out there. We do not want to suggest that we have the answers here.
No.
These are the ground of it all is a healthy dose of not knowing.
Right.
So we're kind of asking questions and poking at things that are really beyond our realm of to develop any firm knowledge of. But it certainly is interesting what happens when you go poking around in there.
You know, I what I really appreciate about this is that I really believe that every good question just leads to a better question.
Right.
Right? So it's not really about seeking answers as it is about asking the right questions.
Mm-hmm. And all of this, of course, informs the basic attitude that we develop towards life. It's impossible that it wouldn't.
Right.
Right. So all things considered, when you really do open the mind to them, it's going to affect the way that you see things and what you end up deciding.
That's right. I think curiosity is a really healthy way to approach life.
Mm-hmm.
Not thinking I know it or I answered it, because I know in my experience, once I think I've got it, I've lost it.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
Right. And so if I can figure out the right questions to ask, that is the lead I'm looking for.
Well, it does seem that when it's like the kiss of death when you feel like you've got it.
Right.
But the pursuit of, you know, at a certain point, we hit that assembly of silence moment, and the base of that is the not striving.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not willing to sum it up by saying that I'm looking for a question.
Mm.
I'll stick with my Taoist roots and basically let it dissolve.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to sit there until I got to do something else.
Right, right.
You know, and I will have to do something else.
Right.
Or I'll get convinced that I have to do something else. Things will come up, you know. At some point, I got to go out there and discipline that dog. I can only be absorbed in the emptiness and silence for so long.
Right.
When there's a yapping miniature, whatever the heck she is. Pincher. Miniature pincher.
Miniature pincher.
Did you know that that's what it was? Can you tell?
Can you tell by the sound of the bark?
Boy.
Wow.
I thought she was a little dog when I got her. Turns out she's actually a big dog.
Big in vocal cords.
And, like, she will bully the other dog away from anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
She had a, she had a tin can that had once had some food in it a few days prior. She just pushed him right out of the way and just said, "This is mine. Forget it." He was like, "Okay."
Wow.
And then having proven it to him.
I mean, he's like three times her size.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she proves it to him.
Right.
Fends him off. And then she's like, "I don't really want it. You can have it." So he goes, "Oh, okay, I'll take it, I guess."
Yeah. Yeah.
He went and took it and laid down with it. There's nothing in it.
Mm.
So I was like, super dominant move by this little, little lady.
Yes.
Okay, so now she's being quiet. We can move on to the next thing on our list, or we could call it quits.
I think that was a good episode right there.
You want to just call it quits now?
I think.
Did we give you enough? So, you know, this is where you can tell us.
Right.
Did we leave you hanging here, or did we give you enough in this episode?
Hey.
We're calling it the radio hour, right? So Assembly of Silence radio hour. Do you need a whole hour for an episode? Do you feel like you're getting ripped off if you get less than an hour? We're going to find out now, because this is the end of our second episode.
Yeah.
We thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back with us again real soon for the next one.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, throw us a bone by subscribing to this channel, visiting our social media pages, and hitting the various like, love, and clap buttons. We welcome all comments, criticisms, and random thoughts. Our email is silentassembly@protonmail.com. Our Twitter handle is @silentassembly. And if you want to be an angel, we have a Patreon page at patreon.com/silentassembly. We look forward to serving you again soon. In the meantime, remember, turn that thing over a few times before you pick it up and take it home.